So as many of you know, in the last year, I've taken up running. And it's sort of amazing because a year ago, I would not have imagined myself to be a runner. But actually today, like an identity that I hold for myself is that I actually consider myself a runner. And part of the problem, I think, was the very first marathon I ever ran was in 2007. And I could have, I did everything wrong that you're not supposed to do at a marathon, right? I didn't train with water stops. I didn't like practice how I was going to receive water. I actually didn't hydrate a couple days beforehand. Like everything that you could do wrong, I sort of did, right? Because I realized like water is an essential component of running, being hydrated. But it doesn't just happen the day of the race, right? It doesn't just happen in the moment of like as you're running, you stop and you get your water and you move on, right? Like hydration has to happen before that. It has to happen usually a couple of days beforehand. If your race is on Sunday, they ask you to start like really hydrating on Thursday, right? And I totally didn't do that. And so like, you know, that first race, like I'm doing everything wrong, and I'm kind of frantically searching for more answers as I'm running this race because I just realized like no matter how much water I'm intaking, I just can't get past this sort of thirst stage. I just can't get past sort of being dehydrated in this process. And of course today's readings are all about thirst. They're all about sort of how we are filled and how we become filled with this spirit, with this desire for God. But I would posit that it begins long before we recognize that we are thirsty. Right, long before that, we recognize that we ourselves have actually become in need of this precious, life-giving water. Even in our first reading with Moses, and you know, this is the Israelite people who has seen, you know, Moses hold out his arms and the staff and part the Red Sea. They've seen the column of fire and smoke. They've seen all of these things, and then they're in the desert, and it's almost as if they're surprised that they become thirsty. You know, it's like somehow like, you know, it's the desert, but for some reason we're still thirsty, right? And they kind of question God and they question Moses. And Moses at a certain point is like, hey, listen, God, if we don't do something, it's going to get ugly, right? You know, like this is going to happen. And so God does this wonderful thing, not just by providing the miracle, but asking the people of Israel to participate in it, right? He has Moses do an action. And it's not a grand action. It's not an action of like holding out the staff so long you have to have people hold up your arms in order to make that happen. It's much more simple. In fact, if you're in the back of the crowd, you might even miss it, right? It's just a couple of taps on a rock. And suddenly water is flowing. And I'm sure that like if you're in the back of the crowd and you're listening and you're kind of wondering, what's going on up there? You know, you're kind of on your tippy toes and you realize like, oh, I think something's happening because people are getting like excited. I think our time in this world right now is kind of similar to this. It's a unique opportunity that it will be the simple things, it'll be the little measures that we do that will matter the most. You know, a week ago I was kind of upset as we were talking about this whole coronavirus thing, and you know, I'm a physical touch person. My love language is through physical touch. I high five everybody. I just love to greet people. That's how I interact with the world. And they're telling us, well, we're not going to do the sign of peace. We're not going to distribute via the cup, you know, and all these other things. And I was kind of finding myself being frustrated because, like, I feel fine. I don't know anybody else who's been to China or any of these other infected places. Like, we'll be fine, you know. But it's amazing, you know, what can happen in the matter of a week. And this reality is, I think, for me, also this invitation to recognize that God isn't inviting me to sort of be the hero of saints of old, you know, that would go to those who were the plague victims and, like, you know, lick their wounds. I know, that's gross, but it happened, right? I mean, we're talking about saints here, people. You know, and this sense in which, you know, people are doing these sort of extravagant things, but what we're being called to do is as simple as tapping on a rock. It's small, but it has serious consequences. And so my being healthy is a lot like sort of like being aware that, one, I'm thirsty, and two, that I can't just wait to the last minute to attend to that thirst, that there has to be some sort of action I do ahead of time. And even our faith, right? Even our journey, Paul is quite explicit today that we are, you know, we are justified by faith. And this has all kinds of consequences. And, you know, I think we had a reformation over it and some other things. But, you know, the reality is, that's an oversimplification, I know. But the reality is that something important has happened, right? That our faith isn't our doing all by ourselves. That it is the small and subtle actions of other people, people who've gone before us. Like even imagine that for many of us here, you know, baptism happened at our infancy, right? That other people made a small choice for us to practice our faith today. Or even the small choice to come on a Sunday when you've already been dispensed from your Sunday obligation. Okay, nobody got up and left. That's good, right? You know, like I was concerned, like, what, I don't have to be here? All right, I'm out, you know. The reality is that as we recognize these small actions, we realize what it means to be community, what it means to actually do things not for ourselves because we can't see the immediate like payoff for that, but that there is something about our faith that is in this communal process. Right? I couldn't see the payoff of my race in 2007 of, like, you know, drinking water and getting, you know, hydrated on Thursday. I could this last October when I followed, like, the routine to the letter of the law and realized that after the race it was an amazing feeling to feel like, oh, wow, I could run that. That was awesome. You know, but it was a little payoff. It was those little actions. It was as simple as just tapping the rock. And even today, to recognize, like, you know, who is being asked to do this, well, we are. And we can tell that because Jesus finds the most sort of, you know, marginalized and the least among the people of Samaria to encounter. This woman who is going to the well at noon means that she is ostracized from her community. We don't know why, but, you know, nobody willingly chooses to go to the well at the hottest part of the day. Right, she's going there because nobody else is around. And it is this woman that Jesus encounters. And we read to you the short version of today's gospel. You're welcome. Because that it's a long reading. And it really is this sort of entrenched reading. But one of the things we didn't read was this beautiful sense in which Jesus knows this woman better than she knows herself. You know, which Jesus encounters and constantly sort of through this wonderful sort of Columbo-esque, if you remember that, the detective from the 70s and 80s, you know, he kind of has this wonderful way of just asking those questions and drawing from her the truth, the reality. And she suddenly recognized that she's thirsting for something far more than water. That she's thirsting for knowledge and for wisdom. She's searching for answers. And the best part is Jesus is saying, it's right here. And to get a better context of this reality, you can imagine the political reality of today between an Israelite and an Israeli and a Palestinian. Right? This is the kind of enmity between these two people. And it is this person that Jesus is reaching out to and saying, I have the life-giving water that will save all of us. And I love that she becomes like one of the first successful disciples, right? Because she goes out and it is the Samaritans sort of believe that she's got something interesting to say. And they are the ones who then follow and go to Jesus. And they have this beautiful line, right? If you listen to like, we believe now, not just because of what you said, but because we've actually seen it ourselves, right? So again, that little act of going out, that little act of tapping on the rock, to invite others to be present, to do those small and subtle sacrifices. So we're now being asked to do these sort of subtle sacrifices. And for most of us, there's no real danger. But the reality is that it's because of these subtle sacrifices that we will ensure that we remain healthy. You know, I've heard that, you know, if somebody who gets this coronavirus, you know, has it, it'll be several days before they begin to manifest symptoms, and they are communicable. And I'm not afraid that I'm going to somehow perish because of this, because I'm a fairly young person. But the reality is we're going to encounter people who might not be able to bounce back from this virus. And so how do we take care of ourselves? Well, we do those small actions. We recognize our thirst for knowledge and our thirst for being a part of this community, and we wash our hands. We sit a little bit further from one another, and even as hard as it is for me to resist high-fiving everybody I see, we take actions and we do things because we're invited to recognize how God is working in our lives. Already you have made this small action by being here today, and for that we are incredibly grateful. You've tapped on that rock once. Are you willing to do so again? In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.